I'd like to welcome all of you to the call, and we thank you for joining us. Today's call is a variation from our normal calls, as this one is geared for the staff members of the firm. And just one reminder before I introduce Sean and Chris, this call is being recorded, and it will be available on our website for download in the next day. If you'd like information on how to download, you can send me an email at susan@atticusonline.com, and I'll be happy to send off instructions on how to get to the call. Many of you may already know Sean McNallis. Sean's a senior practice advisor with Atticus, and she also provides training and certification to Atticus's team of coaches. Sean has also authored or co-authored a number of books on practice and time management, as well as marketing. And our other speaker today is Chris Lee. And Chris has been involved with Atticus for many years. If any of you have participated in staff program a few years back, Chris was at the helm as Chris Safassi. She was married recently and now goes by Chris. Facilitated each call to help staff better understand how to implement Atticus tips and techniques with less stress while supporting their attorneys. Chris knows firsthand the difference that the principals make. Having been where you are for more than 25 years, she served as receptionist, legal secretary, bookkeeper, admin assistant, and office manager. And Chris has also owned a small business for the past 5 years, so she appreciates your attorney's perspective as well. And Chris was featured on Oprah's show in June of 2002 for the ability to negotiate the right to work from home successfully as a single mom with two ADHD sons. So with all of that said, let me turn it over to Sean.
Hi, everyone. I'm actually going to have Chris lead off for us this morning. Just to give you another overview of what we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about the popular subjects of managing competing priorities, which is something that all of you struggle with no matter what you're doing in a law firm. How to manage up. This will be specifically geared towards training staff on how to manage the attorneys that they work for. So you attorneys on the line, listen carefully because you're about to be managed from the bottom up. And we're also going to speak about how to deal with difficult clients and make your clients feel like a guest in your law firm so that they feel well taken care of. So that's kind of an overview of the topics we're going to cover, and I'm going to turn it over to Chris right now. The whole call will be sort of lecture combined with question and answer, and in fact, anytime you guys want to ask a question, Susan, they would just take it off of, they would press 6 and that would unmute them?
No, actually, you or Chris will need to press the 7 to unmute all the participants.
Okay, all right. So we'll keep it on muted mode, and then when we open it up for questions, we'll unmute it so that we can talk back and forth. But with no further ado, let you speak with Chris.
Absolutely. I guess the first thing I want to say that this is just an extraordinary turnout, and I just thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend some time with us. We truly appreciate it. And the first thing I would like to do is just acknowledge you, because here is my perspective about our time together. I know that you are already doing a really great job for your attorney. You're a hard worker. You're dedicated. You are committed to the cause. You're obviously very intelligent, and you're a quick learner. And hopefully you're extremely flexible because, let's face it, you work in a hectic environment, and you don't have complete control over it by any stretch of the word. So if you weren't ADHD before you started, you probably are now. But the bottom line is that your job description does require that you be flexible and responsive. And if you're not, ultimately it's going to be your hanging on the line, and you're going to be the one who suffers. That could look like getting passed by for promotions, or not getting the money that you desire to make, or the perks or the bonuses. But that's not our goal. And so what we just want to do here is toss around some ideas that you can try on for size. You know, if it fits, great. If it doesn't, tweak it. If it just doesn't work, throw it out the window. But we want to just be open to possibilities. So I hope that works for y'all. So the first topic that I'm going to take on is how to manage competing priorities. And what we've discovered over the years is that they're actually defined by internal and external forces, and so we do well to establish some guidelines for setting our priorities first. So the first thing you would want to do is always ask yourself three questions, and they are, is this responsibility time sensitive? And by that, of course, it would mean, is there a legal deadline? And that could be driven by the court system, such as a hearing or a trial, or statute of limitations also. So that's the first question that we have to ask ourselves to truly define a priority in the law office environment. The second would be, is there a verbal or written agreement that's been made? So did you make a promise to your attorney maybe saying, yes, you would take this on? You may be regretting it now, but if you've said that, you've got to deliver the goods. And is there a possibility that you or your attorney actually made a promise to the client? And that could be something as simple as an appointment or coming in to sign documents or closing, or you get the idea. But if there's a promise out there, whether it's spoken or written, then, again, that's a criteria for a true priority. And then the third one is going to be more important to the attorney, but we hope you're empathetic, and that is there a cash flow crisis? Because life happens, and it certainly happens in the firms, small and large, and so it could be that there's just a high-value case that truly has risen to a priority simply because it's going to support the existing budget. So, having tossed those three points out there, it's always great to mirror back. So I'm going to hit the seven, and if there's anyone who wants to go ahead and repeat those three points for me, that would be great. And also, is there anything that y'all would like to add to the list? So I'm going to hit the seven to open it up, and then you'll need to hit six to unmute yourself. I'm not sure what mode I'm in.
Yeah, Chris, I can still hear you. And it may be that I think they can hear as well. Let me just go ahead and repeat back some of these things.
I have it on conversation mode now, Sean. I just hit the toggle.
Okay.
So if there's anyone that wants to mirror back the 3 points, be brave, step up to the plate, and go for it.
If no one will, I will.
Go for it.
Okay, number one, is it time sensitive? You have a legal deadline, et cetera. Number two, is there a verbal slash written agreement where you promise to do it, make a promise to the client? Number three, is there a cash flow crisis?
Okay, excellent. Now, since we're still in conversation mode, is there anything that y'all would like to add to this list?
What are the consequences of failing to do it?
Well, and that's where we're going to have logical outcomes. And, of course, on the front side of the situation, we want to have agreements about what those outcomes are. And that is going to help us on the other side of it so we're not caught off guard. So
and let
we
me,
know
let
where
me
we stand.
Throw out something here, Chris, as well on this. When you look at the three ways of determining a deadline or a priority, on the legal side, should you fail to properly prepare for a hearing or a trial, that'll have a lot of grave consequences for your client. Statute of limitations, you could have a case one day and no case the next. Verbal or written agreement made with a client. If the consequences of not following through with that are a very upset client, or it could even be another attorney that you made a verbal promise to. So you never want to disappoint a client. We always want to keep in mind that a disappointed or upset client tells two or three times more people about your office and how not good you are than a satisfied client. So disappointed clients, not a good thing. And then the cash flow crisis, the pretty much the consequences there are, you won't have the money that you need to continue doing business. So, you might have to tap into your credit line, loan them, practice some money. All kinds of ugly consequences could come from that.
Absolutely, and I would throw in there, since we want to support staff today in having this better relationship with supporting their attorneys, that it's obviously going to show up as falling onto your plate and, again, impacting how you're showing up in the firm and the contribution that you want to make when it comes back to those promotions, more money, perks, bonuses, those kinds of things. Okay, Sean, I'm going to go ahead, and if we don't have anything else to add to the list, I'll wait one brief second here. Then I'm going to put us back on 7, and we'll move on to our next point. So if it gets dead silent, y'all, you'll know what's going on.
And, Chris, before you continue, can you hear me, Chris? Hello, Chris?
Excellent. We're back in presentation mode.
Okay, so Chris, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, great. I just want to add one point. Chris is outlining how to figure out priorities, because what tends to happen on a daily basis in the law office is that everything looks almost equally important. When people get into feeling very overwhelmed and a lot of requests are being made of them and there's a short amount of time and only so many things that they can take on, suddenly everything looks equally important, and it can be very difficult to tell which is the true priority. And that's why Chris is going through just starting with, you know, defining a lot of these pieces for both the staff and the attorneys that are on the call. Because the one way of defining priority that we didn't go into is where the attorney says, I want you to do it because I want you to do it now. You know what I mean? It's very urgent in their mind. It may not be a legal deadline. It may not fit the true criteria of what we've talked about, the time-sensitive or legal deadline or cash flow crisis. It's just the attorney wants the thing done now. So we're just trying to give all of you distinctions about how to look at priorities so that you truly have some kind of ranking system, because everything cannot get done all at once, all at the same time.
Oh, that's right. And that ranking is important to both, to the staff member and to the attorney, and obviously to the client at large. So that's exactly right. And that does bring us to the conversation of how to manage up, and that might be a different concept or word or take for y'all. So since we've already clarified what defines a true priority, we know we're going to have the challenges. I mean, they're out there. Sean's exactly right. So there's no sense acting like they're not. And so I would say, for starters, challenge number one, it's probably the toughest one of all, and that is, what part are you and I playing in this priority crisis, this crunch? I mean, what part are we playing? And that's a tough one to take on and look at, but it has to be said, because the first, you know, person that we have control over is ourselves. And so we have to get real with ourselves about whether or not we're actually working on our top priorities as we've just defined them, or we're not. And if we're not, we have to stop and regroup and get back on track. And I'm saying this because I'm guilty. The bottom line is, as a human being, it's very easy for us to do the things that we like to do. And then we avoid the things that we don't, and ultimately it does come back to bite us in the hind end, because when we do avoid or procrastinate, it ends up creating more chaos for ourselves. If we knock it out, it's not in the mix, so it's no longer a priority issue, it's handled, and that makes life good. So the first, you know, challenge is we got to get real with ourselves and just ask if we're honoring these priorities as we define them. And I would say the second challenge is probably for staff, what I think of as the dartboard syndrome, having been there, where you truly are centered and on track, and the work just keeps coming from every direction. And it's like, you know, now what? So if we're going to have a proactive approach to that, we've got some possibilities that are out there that we've seen work, and I'm just going to sort of touch basis on what might be, like, you know, ideal, middle ground, worst case. So for ideal world, let's say, one thing that we've seen that is extremely powerful is what we call a weekly case status review, where the attorneys and the relevant staff members come together as a team on a fixed day, fixed time each week, and during this meeting, y'all look at what's on the plate and who's going to do what and the by-wins. And that way, if we see the potholes in the plan, we can work together as a team and shift the workload back and forth, you know, for a win in meeting our deadlines. And that is ideal, and it does work. And I would say, you know, I hope that everyone that's on the call will be open to that idea. Toss it around, brainstorm it if you're not doing that. And if you are, maybe you could share in a minute about how you're doing it and the difference it makes. The middle ground might be that you've just got maybe the one attorney and support staff member that actually are meeting one-on-one, and then the staff member has to do a really great job with reporting up to other people on the team and throwing the red flags and making powerful requests to actually manage the other team members, the other attorneys or, you know, that whoever's in the mix there. And then obviously, worst case, is that the attorneys are meeting amongst themselves without staff, and they're discussing the caseload and negotiating who's going to do what by when, and then the work just starts trickling down. And here's where you really, as a staff member, have to have at least a few tips and techniques on managing up, or you're going to be plowed over, and it's not pleasant. So,
especially since what I've seen, Chris, is a lot of times the attorneys won't meet with one another to discuss who does what.
Absolutely.
They just all decide that, you know, so-and-so is going to do it, and so-and-so becomes the go-to person in the office, and they become completely overwhelmed. It's not unusual, and there's probably many of you on this call that fit this picture. You know, you're the can-do girl. You are the, you know, you're the one that they go to. They know that you can get it done. And you end up getting burned out because so many people are relying on you as the one that can get it done. It's really hard to, you know, set a high standard and then continue to perform day after day after day, you know, being the one that everyone depends upon. So, you know, you've really got to be responsible for yourself there and make sure that you can continually handle the requests that are being made of you.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, just like I've heard you say repeatedly, Sean, building that no muscle, and that's a tough thing for a lot of people to do. We're going to look at in a minute, even moving from, you know, the extreme of passive aggressive to assertive, because it's going to be necessary. And again, if we're not clear for ourselves first about what the true priorities are, it's going to be very difficult for us to have these conversations with the attorneys, all for a good cause, to support that we're all on track and getting the results that we want. So we have to be clear first. So I'm going to say that from the standpoint of managing up, the first thing I'd like to toss out there is what I know does not work, and and that is when we start to get into these conversations, we have to keep outside of the, like, the solving circle, literally. You can see the circle with yourself at the center, and you're going to try to solve the conflicts on the table. And outside of that circle, you've got to push out criticizing and blaming and complaining and nagging and threatening and punishing. And when I say punishing, I mean it can be something as simple as withholding support or even moving into pouting mode or trying to take control, because the bottom line is you can't. You control you. And so those things aren't going to work. We've got to shove them outside of the circle. They've got to stay outside of the solving circle, or we're just not going to get the results that we're after. But what can work and does work when we're attempting to manage up is being assertive. And so when I'm thinking of assertive, I'm actually thinking of, you know, you're self-confident, you're self-controlled, you're willing to get your needs taken care of, but you're also remaining open to the needs of others. And, of course, this is going to be the opposite extreme of swinging over there to aggressive, which is going to violate the rights of others and just stir up trouble, or passive, which is going to set you up for being the resentful doormat. And so that's not going to work either, and so we're just always looking for that happy medium of equal regard, because you matter, the attorneys matter, and together everyone truly accomplishes more. And so when we have got that distinction for ourselves and find ourselves there in the middle of moving and acting in an assertive manner, then we can start making some powerful requests, legitimate requests. And one of the things that's going to be helpful there is you get to decide for yourself whether or not this is a time for an ask you know, making a strong, powerful request, or a tell, where you're going to be making a statement that you need to make. And so you get to weigh that out. And the only thing I would say, if it's truly an ask, there's always going to be room for negotiation. So if you're putting a request out there, know that that's automatically setting the conversation up for negotiation, and that's fair. And if not, if you're going to make a tell, you're going to do it without getting angry or defensive, and it's going to be non-judgmental. The bottom line is, if you envision a triangle, at the bottom of that triangle, you want to see, you want to know your own bottom line first. You can't know if it's being crossed if you don't know it for yourself. So the bottom of that triangle becomes your bottom line, and the left side of the triangle becomes you deciding whether or not this is a time to ask and make a request or a tell and make a statement. And then on the right side, the other side of the triangle, is coming into an agreement and having that agreement work for both of the parties that are involved. And I would say, in an extreme situation, if it actually comes down to having to confront a person, then it's really great to stick with the three-part formula that was actually designed by Dr. Thomas Gordon from Gordon's International. And he, and I've used this for years, he has the person just think in three parts. Focus on the behavior, not the person. And it's like, what is showing up as the problem? Focus on that. And then the impact that it has on you, the concrete, tangible impact that it has on you, and then how it makes you feel. And so an example of tying that together, especially relevant in a law office where we absolutely get the yous out of the picture, you know, no you this, you that, you always, you never, which is going to send our attorneys into extreme defense mode, then we can say, okay, when work comes my way without anyone checking in with me, I can't work my plan. And it makes me feel out of the loop and unimportant and frustrated, whatever, you know, you want to stick in there. What can we do to change this? And, of course, your heart in the matter is you truly want to help. You just also want a chance to say yes or no and manage your words so you can truly offer, you know, great support. And so, again, there's no you in that sentence. And the same thing, you know, when I'm belittled or someone's lurking over my shoulder or I hear demands coming down the hallway, it catches me off guard and I lose momentum and it makes me feel inadequate or uncomfortable or whatever. And I'm not. Therefore, my request is that you treat me with respect. We both matter here, and let's make every effort to work together as a team.
What Chris is talking about here, guys, is just some phrases, some scripted language that you guys can use if you are feeling totally overwhelmed by the attorneys in your office. And for some of you, this will not apply. For others, it will apply. But she's suggesting, as a way of managing up, that you express yourself using some of these phrases to get out of your overwhelm, especially if you haven't been enduring for a long period, getting work from multiple attorneys or associates or others who are not consulting with one another, and just keep piling the work on you. That's a very difficult situation to find yourself in, and you've got to take care of yourself in a situation like that, otherwise you really burn out. So Chris is just talking about, here's some suggested ways to sort of deflect the situation and ask that you be more in the loop, in the planning of the work, that you can respond and you know, feedback in a way that's powerful.
Absolutely, and I have to believe on a call this size that there's the team members out there who are using this and using it successfully. And if that's the case, I'm going to put us on back on 7 for a minute so that if there's anyone who would say, okay, you know, initially I felt a little passive, trumped on that kind of thing, and I exercised this properly and it made a difference. Whatever contribution y'all want to make at this point, I just want to take it off of presentation mode for a minute to get your feedback.
This is Ruth from Austin, Texas.
Okay, conversation mode is on. So, staff
I think
members.
I heard Rita from Texas.
This is Ruth from Texas.
Okay.
And I've used that. I've been in situations where I've had to deal with 10 attorneys at one time, different aspects of law in a law firm. And I have felt that it's the way that you bring it across in a very professional manner, and when you, I've been given multiple priorities and deadlines. And what I do is when I found myself in this situation where I've had to go back to the attorney that have delegated deadlines and say, this attorney gave me this, this attorney gave me this. I'm feeling a little overwhelmed, and they have kind of offended because I've gone to them in regards to their deadline. But then I put it back on the other attorney and let them discuss it amongst themselves and prioritize amongst themselves, and I have felt that I've gotten really good results from that.
That's awesome.
But it, you know, in a professional manner. It's all how you approach the attorney, and I think you will gain the respect in that aspect as well.
Yeah, that's been my experience, too, that they actually appreciate it because your heart in the matter is that the work gets done and it gets done well. And obviously, if we've got too much on our plate, then we're going to be prone to the errors and breakdowns, and what does that do? That creates that cycle of more time and more breakdown and more, you know, problems. So, absolutely, fabulous share. Is there anything else that anyone wants to add before we roll right along at a clip? Okay, I'm going to put it back on presentation mode, and we'll keep moving along.
Hello?
Sean, I'm
yes.
back in presentation mode.
Okay, great.
Okay, and obviously, I guess just to finish that list off as far as the things that we know are going to work, it's just sometimes in the heat of the moment it's difficult to listen, but it's still the old two ears, one mouth thing, and if we can sort of get off of some of our stuff sometimes and just step into their shoes, that's always going to be helpful and be a good receiver when it comes to feedback. I know for me personally, one of the huge things that I've taken on for myself is that when someone gives me any type of feedback, even if it's uncomfortable, I don't like it, I don't want to hear it, I've chosen to receive it as a gift because then I can take it and do with it whatever I do. But that's been huge for me personally. And then obviously just being understanding and maybe shifting things from it being all on one side or the other to let's just keep moving towards brainstorming together and bringing options and solutions to pick from. Now, this has been just so wonderful. It's worked so beautifully for me over the years to always be thinking ahead and bringing to the table, okay, this isn't working, but here are some solutions and ideas and options that you could pick from. And everybody just loves and appreciates that. So let's just move right along with the, I guess this is something that has become a mantra for me around things that work, and it's just, again, a shift of a perspective that Chris can manage, and that makes me feel good because that takes me from the place of feeling like a victim back over to a victor. And that is that I sort of operate from a support versus fix, rescue, and control mode. And it's really become a mantra for me because if I'm in support mode, you know, I can be over here saying, what would really great support look like to you and how can I help and what would it look like, feel like, and then try to deliver. But when I'm in fix, rescue, and control mode, it's going nowhere because we don't need to fix our attorneys. They're not broken. And we don't need to rescue them. They're not on fire. However, when they're acting in adrenaline mode like they tend to do, they might shoot up in flames. And we don't need to control them because we can't. I mean, that's the bottom line. So we have to control what we can control. And I guess that, having been in that world where, just like Ruth was sharing, where you've got so much going on, so many people to answer up to, so many responsibilities, it actually feels good to know that we can control what we can control. And if we do a really good job with that, then, you know, everything else feels better. So, Sean, as far as a stop and a check-in before we reel on to your segment, I guess if there's for me personally, what I want to say is just where does this leave you as far as what I've shared? Is there any of it you can relate to? Is there any of it you feel that you can use or it's even a booster shot? whatever. I'm going to put it back on presentation mode just so I have that level of completion with the group.
Okay.
Cool. We're back in conversation mode. So is there anything that y'all need to say to complete on this section of our time together?
Chris, why don't we actually, since time is pretty short, why don't we go ahead and keep going? Because I want to talk about maximizing productivity.
Absolutely. I'll put it back into presentation mode.
Okay, good. Okay, guys, this is Sean, and I want to talk a bit about maximizing productivity and minimizing some of the interruptions you face on a daily basis. You know, Chris has told us about prioritizing, given us distinctions about prioritizing, given us some ideas of language that we can use to manage up when, you know, you're giving multiple projects and they have competing priorities. You need to always bounce it back up to the attorneys, find out, have the attorneys confer, find out what the most important priority is, and then follow that. And it keep encouraging the attorneys to work together and to include you in their daily planning so that you're not faced with this competing priority thing all the time. But I want to talk about when you actually do sit down and are trying to do some work. What I know is a lot of you do not have offices. A lot of you are sitting in cubicles. A lot of you don't have control over your time in quite the way attorneys would, and you don't have control over your space the way that a lot of attorneys do. So taking control of your time the way that we suggest the attorneys do, which is quite often by having calls held and having doors closed, it's not an option for you. I mean, you have truly some of the biggest challenges when it comes to getting work done, especially detailed work of any kind, work that requires concentration, because you are in an environment where there might be a high level of chit-chat and telephones ringing at all times. So I just don't want you to think that we don't recognize that that's the environment that you have to deal with, because we do. Let me tell you, though, what a couple of people have done to maximize their productivity in spite of all the interruptions and the level of chatter and the open office plan in which they're working. What some people will do is they will come in early. They'll come in, they'll work it out with their attorneys that so that they can come in early. Because most of us, let's face it, have our best energy at the beginning of the day. And some people who need to have some quiet time in which to do some work will actually negotiate coming in early so that they'll have an hour, hour and a half, whatever the amount of time is, before the phones start ringing, before their office mates start showing up. That's one technique. I call it working undertime as opposed to overtime. For a lot of you, coming in early is not an option. Staying a little later may be an option. It's one thing that you can do to get more of quiet time. Now, some offices will stagger the lunch hour. A lot of times the phone quiets down a bit over the lunch hour, and some people will trade off the lunch hour where they will stay and work through the 12 to 1 and reserve their most important work for that period in which they won't be interrupted, and their partner will, you know, pick up the phone during that time, or the phone will be on voicemail during that time. Some offices, you know, they've got two or three different lunch hours going on so that during that time there's always someone that can take advantage of some quiet time or take advantage of picking up the phone for another person that's trying to get work done. This, by the way, works all day long. You don't have to just do this around the lunch hours. You can at any time, you know, negotiate who handles either direct incoming calls if there's not a receptionist in place and the rest of you have to handle the calls, or overflow calls from the receptionist, because we know that all trickles onto your plate. And you guys can say, you know, I have offices that say, okay, for the calls or the overflow calls, you know, Susan will pick them up in the morning, and then Joan will pick them up in the afternoon. And that allows the their office mates to get more work done without the interruption, the constant interruption of the phone. You know, you can, depending on the call volume associated with your office, you know, you could get two or three calls an hour, or you could get 8 to 10 to 20 calls an hour. It really just depends on how busy an office you have and how large the office is. And when you're handling a huge amount of calls like that, your ability to do any other work, and especially any detailed work, is really diminished. So trading off phone duty can really be a big boost. Now, another thing that can work, especially if you're working in an open office situation in cubicles, and you want to, you know, do what we've instructed a lot of attorneys to do, and that is have production time. Production time, like I mentioned before, is just really, it's an hour, hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours, in which you are not interrupted and in which you get to focus on your highest priority work, the stuff that requires detail, the stuff that requires concentration, and you not being interrupted every 5 minutes in order to complete. So what some people have managed to do around that is they brought in headphones, and they literally will wear headphones or earplugs during their production time. Of course, they let everyone know, hey, it's now, you know, 9 o'clock, and between 9 and 10, remember, I have my quiet time, so don't want to be interrupted. And, of course, you work this out with, you know, the team and the attorneys ahead of time. But you plop the headphones on just to make it a little quieter, and you focus on your work. Some people actually have telephone headsets that are like headphones, and they use those to block some of the noise. They're not taking calls, obviously, but they use that to block some of the noise. Other people that I've worked with, if there's computer access in other rooms, such as conference rooms or unused offices, and they can pick up their things and go into a conference room or another office to be behind closed doors and actually get things done on a daily basis, say for an hour, that's something that's worked for people also. What some people will do is take a look at their environment and work out moving, distracting equipment. I spoke to one gal about 2 weeks ago, and one of her big issues was the printer is right next to her desk. She's in a sort of a two-sided cubicle situation where the printer was right next to her desk. Convenient when she wanted to print something? Yes. But when anyone else wanted to print something, they'd walk out to the printer, wait for the thing to print, strike up a conversation with her. Not that she wants to be antisocial, but it was very, very distracting for her in trying to get her work done. We worked out a solution where the printer was put in a different location, away from her desk. She did not mind getting up for the stuff that she had printed out, but she was grateful for the fact that no longer was her desk the meeting place for people to chat while they were waiting for their items to be printed out. Something else you can request, if you are in especially open-type cubicles and you're trying to cut down on the noise or even the visual distractions, you know, people walking by, catching your eyes, wanting to talk, you know, request another partition if you're only partially partitioned off. See if you can add partitions. They help with absorbing sound, and they help cut off some of the visual and the verbal distractions as well. I actually had another gal who worked in a cubicle situation, and when she wanted to take her power hour, her production time, she worked it out, of course, with everybody in the office, what hour she wouldn't be taking any calls or taking any interruptions, and she would pin a sign that says power hour outside her cubicle, and people would respect it because they'd worked it out ahead of time. One gal ran a piece of tape across her cubicle. This is a little more desperate measure. She would run a piece of duct tape across her cubicle opening to block anybody from getting at her. Now, I'm not suggesting you do that. But for her, it was her way of stopping people from, you know, getting to her. I always preach that when you are working in an office, that people respect each other's times. The staff have to be flexible, but it's fair to give staff time to get their work done also. The quality of their work is going to depend on them having time to focus and be able to be detail-oriented, and so that they can proof the work that they're doing without constant interruptions. It's a good idea to, you know, focus on some of these control measures and, you know, actually allow them that freedom to have that time. One of the techniques we recommend is batching, and that's for, you know, if the team has questions of the attorney and the attorney is behind closed doors, we encourage the team to batch their questions, write down all the, you know, work as far as they can in their file, write down their questions, pick up the, you know, when they can go no further, pick up the next file, go work as far as they can, stop when they have a question, write that down, pick up the next file, and so forth. It's a good way to work that shows respect for the attorney's time, because you're not running in there at all times to interrupt them in their trying to, when they're behind closed doors trying to get work done. But by the same token, I request that attorneys pay the same respect to their staff and batch their questions as much as possible for their staff meeting, or when just, you know, getting together with the staff at one time and asking them three questions as opposed to interrupting them three times throughout the day. I'm really a big fan of regularly held daily meetings, either at the beginning or the end of the day, in which staff can ask their batched questions, attorneys can give their batched direction, and it reduces the amount of interruptions that you have to have during the course of the day. Now, some offices have taken up a policy of office-wide quiet time, and this is, you know, perhaps they'll pick between 4 and 5 in the afternoon, or between 5 and 6, or between 1 and 2. They pick some time period in which the receptionist will take calls, but no calls are put through unless it's an emergency, and of course you have to work out what the emergency is. But everybody, staff and attorneys, are allowed to focus on their production at that time, and no interruptions are permitted. So that's an approach that some offices take. Other offices take Friday is the catch-up day. Friday, you know, we'll minimize the amount of calls that are put through. We tell people that Friday is a work day for us. And we let the receptionist pick up the phones, but no calls are put through unless it's an emergency. And every Friday is makeup time, where people can use the day for uninterrupted production as much as possible. That may work for your office. It may not. Those are just a few of the different ways to handle productivity and to really reduce interruptions. Now, let me just roll into a moment of conversation about how to make clients feel welcome. You know, smiling when you're on the telephone can really make a difference. People can hear the expression on your face. So when you are picking up on the phone, having actually a smile on your face, and if you didn't know this, I used to work at Disney, and this is one of the things they used to preach at Disney, is, you know, pick up the phone with a smile on your face. This is good for making clients feel welcome. Having a comfortable waiting room that reflects the level of work that you do and the type of clients that you have is really important. Being able to offer cookies or candy or snacks in the waiting room is a nice touch for clients that may be intimidated, might be really upset by the various different problems, unfamiliar with and unaccustomed to coming in and sitting down with attorneys. Anything that you, the team, can do to make clients feel more welcome and more comfortable is a very good thing. You want to make a powerful first impression on people, so make sure that your waiting room and your conference room and any other offices that clients will see makes a nice impression. Try to remember names. Keep it personal. You know, be friendly. Ask about family members if you know them. remember somebody's names, very important. If kids come to your office on a regular basis, providing a little play area for kids, having a little television with videos there that you can use for entertaining kids, it can be a very good thing. Also, and this goes for all staff members, when you're working with people, especially when you've got them there and they're all in your office, don't assume that they know what course their case is going to take or what it looks like to work through their case. What you want to do is explain what you're doing and explain give them context so that they understand what they're involved in. A lot of attorneys and staff members we know will actually sort of draw a diagram or some sort of little flow chart saying, okay, today you're here with us, we're going to have another meeting, and then I'm going to be asking for such and such documents, and then perhaps we'll go to a hearing, we'll have another meeting. You know, literally outline the process for them, explain what it's going to look like. This goes a long way to making people feel more comfortable, and it sets their expectation level. You want to make sure to manage people's expectation levels at every step of the way, because when they don't understand something, it shows up as a negative to them, and they may have an expectation that their case will resolve in a month and a half. You know it's going to probably take 8 months. So try to spell out what the process the clients are involved in and set their expectation level at an appropriate place. Handling disgruntled clients. If you've got somebody that has not felt taken care of, or because they've got an quirky personality, shall we say, tends to get disgruntled, and many of you know about our ranking of A, B, C, and D clients. We don't have time to get into that now. You can ask your attorneys more about it. But if you're working with somebody that gets disgruntled and is personally confronting to you, either on the telephone or in person, what you want to do to handle them is to initially let them vent. Attend to what they're saying, let them say their piece, and get it out. And then once they've got it out, do reflective listening. Say something like, you know, Mrs. Johnson, what I hear you saying is, and actually reflect back to them what you hear they are saying their problem is. Now, doing this does not admit any guilt on your part, but what it does is make the client feel heard. And that's important for diffusing the situation. You want to make the client feel heard about what their situation is. So let them vent, reflect back what they have to say, and then once they feel heard, avoid offering a lot of excuses, because that'll actually put them more into a defensive posture. What you want to do is try sounding sympathetic. This, again, is not an admission of guilt. What you may have done may have had no bearing on how upset that these people are. You know, just say something like, I'm sorry you had to go through that, or that must have been difficult for you, or I can understand how you feel that way. These are phrases that tend to have a calming effect on people. They don't admit guilt on your part, again, since that's probably not really a problem. But they, again, it's calming. It has a calming effect on the clients. And then go into problem-solving mode, where you actually take the pieces of what their conflict or dispute have been and actually handle what you can. Obviously, staff members can only handle so much, and there's going to be a point at which they will need to bump the client up to speaking to an attorney, because only the attorney can handle this. But I do know of a lot of staff that are guilty of not trying to handle lower level clients with lower level problems that they could handle, and they immediately, instead of trying to fuse the situation, they immediately pass the disgruntled client on to the attorney. Try to use some of these techniques to handle the situation. And it's also very good if you can offer sometimes just token gestures. If there's, you know, something, if you can, this is for the attorney now, if there's something that's gone wrong on your side, you know, offering to reduce the bill, giving some token gesture of understanding on your part, is often very helpful in diffusing the situation as well. So with that, I'm going to actually, since we're almost at the end of our hour, I'm not going to take any questions. What I'd like you guys to do is spend the last 5 minutes of the hour talking about the different subjects we've gone over today. We've talked about managing up, managing multiple priorities. We've talked about productivity and minimizing interruptions. I'd like for all of you to sit together and discuss what you're going to take out of today's call. And we appreciate your attention and have enjoyed speaking with you guys today. Sorry we didn't have time for more interaction. If you like this kind of call and want to see more of these, please email Susan at Atticus Online, and we'll see about having more calls just for staff. So with that said, goodbye from Sean
and Chris.
And Chris, and have a good rest of the day. Yes. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.